So we, the No Outsiders campaign, so we just want to able to have control over what they are being taught.
Speaking to a local Muslim activist, Shakil Afsar explained why he feels the petition received so much support.
I think it would have got a lot more signatures if there wasn't this pro-LGBT narrative in our society where if you speak against them, you are completely shut down, locked up, and the keys thrown away. I think there would have been a lot more. And I think with the people who have signed, they are people who are at the forefront of understanding what's happening. There are many people who don't really understand the situation. They don't even really know what's happening until their children are coming home with these books. I believe that if there was a transparent media, this petition would have signatures in the millions.
So far, the protests have largely received negative coverage, with the establishment refusing to budge on the RSE curriculum. Activists believe this uncompromising stance could boil over to more parent protests in 2023. Robert Carter, London.
Yemenis are growing frustrated with the United Nations' failure to condemn the Saudi-led war on Yemen, or to hold them responsible for the ensued disastrous ramifications. This comes just days after the UN Special Envoy for Yemen, Hans Grundberg, addressed the United Nations Security Council about the situation in Yemen. While calling for an end to violence, Grundberg declined to condemn the ongoing Saudi artillery shelling that has killed or injured dozens of civilians in the northern province of Sa'dah.
I call on the parties to respect international humanitarian law. Military activity, combined with negative rhetoric and escalatory political and economic measures, create a situation where a simple miscalculation could reignite a cycle of violence that will be difficult.
Grundberg also called for humanitarian aid to Yemen, but mentioned nothing about the lifting of the Saudi blockade, which is the main obstacle preventing vital aid and food supplies from entering the country. This military general we spoke with on the streets of the Yemeni capital says the United Nations is the root cause of all evil in Yemen.
The UN destroys every country they get involved in. Look at what they did in Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Sudan. As for Yemen, the United Nations and all of its envoys' efforts in Yemen have been directed at spying on Yemenis, instigating conflicts among Yemenis and fueling chaos and instability.
Some Yemenis are calling on their government to abandon all political talks with the UN. They accuse the UN of complicity with the Saudi-led coalition in the killing of Yemenis. The Yemeni government stated that if the blockade is not lifted and salaries are not paid, the only option left is war.
The Yemeni people and government have expressed that the 8-year Saudi-imposed siege on Yemen must be broken by any means necessary. This after years of failed political efforts to resolve the conflict by the United Nations, an entity which most Yemenis lost trust in and accused of supporting the Saudi military aggression on Yemen. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird UTILSAT3B and IRANSATORBAT5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States and yet again another shooting with mass fatalities. Around a dozen people were killed and about the same number were injured in a mass shooting in the largely Asian city of Monterey in Southern California. Eyewitnesses said the assailant opened fire indiscriminately with a semi-automatic weapon at an event in Monterey Park as the local community was celebrating Chinese Lunar New Year. Captain Andrew Mayer of L.A. Sheriff's Department said officers had responded to emergency calls at around 10:20 p.m. on Saturday and found people pouring out of the premises. He said the officers made entry to the location and located additional victims. Police say the victims were transported to numerous local hospitals and were listed in various conditions from stable to critical. Witnesses said there was a shooter with a machine gun who had multiple rounds of ammunition on him so he could reload. It is still unknown whether the suspect knew his victims or whether it was a targeted attack. Investigations are underway into the shooting to find out the motive behind it and whether or not the incident was a hate crime. But the factors that lead to tragedies like the one in Monterey Park are deeply ingrained in U.S. politics, culture, and law. As defined by the Gun Violence Archive, a mass shooting is an incident during which four or more people are shot. The Monterey incident is the 33rd such mass shooting that has taken place in the U.S. already since the beginning of this year. It follows shootings at an MLK Day celebration in Fort Pierce, Florida, and a shooting that killed six people in Goshen, California, on that very same day. The Monterey shooting also follows numerous such events last year, including at a Walmart in Virginia, the one in Colorado Springs, Colorado, a shooting on a school bus allegedly targeting members of the University of Virginia football team, and a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois, last summer. The United States experienced 647 mass shootings last year, illustrating the severity of the issue with guns. The mass shootings in the U.S. come as no other country has suffered such a high death toll from gun violence. Every day, more than 110 Americans die at the end of a gun, including suicides and homicides, an average of more than 40,000 per year. In 2020 alone, more than 45,000 Americans died at the end of a gun, whether by homicide or suicide, more than any other year on record. In terms of the number of incidents, since 2009, there has been an annual average of 19 shootings in which at least 4 people are killed. The U.S. gun homicide rate is as much as 26 times that of other high-income countries. Its gun suicide rate is nearly 12 times higher. This, as gun control opponents have typically framed the gun violence epidemic in the U.S. as a symptom of a broader mental health crisis. Every country has people with mental health issues and extremists. Those problems aren't unique. What is unique in the U.S.'s expansive view of civilian gun ownership, ingrained in politics, in culture, and in the law since the nation's founding, and a national political process that has so far proved incapable of changing that norm. In terms of the number of guns in the U.S. and how they contribute to the related violence, one estimate from the Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 390 million guns in circulation in the U.S. in 2018, or about 120 and a half firearms per 100 residents. More recent data also suggests that gun ownership grew significantly over the last several years. One study published by the Annals of Internal Medicine in February found that 7.5 million U.S. adults, just under 3% of the population, became first new gun owners between January 2019 and April 2021. But what are the causes of gun violence in the U.S.? Easy access to firearms, a lack of comprehensive background checks and regulations, social and economic factors such as poverty, racism, and mental illness could be named as such. When it comes to the National Rifle Association, the NRA lobbies heavily against all forms of gun control and argues that more guns make the country safer. Despite years of financial woes and internal strife, the NRA remains the most powerful gun lobby in the United States, with a substantial budget to influence members of Congress on gun policy. In January, the NRA filed for bankruptcy as part of a fraud case against some of its own senior staff. Over the last several election cycles, the NRA and other organizations have consistently spent more on pro-gun rights messaging than their rivals in the gun control lobby. Who supports gun control? Despite widespread and vocal public outrage, often in the wake of gun violence, American support for stricter gun laws in 2020 fell to the lowest level since 2014, according to polling by Gallup. 52% of Americans surveyed said they wanted stricter gun laws, while 35% said they should remain the same. 11% surveyed said laws should be made less strict. Last year, Congress reached a deal on limited gun reforms for the first time in nearly 30 years, but the recent shootings underscored just how embedded gun violence is in the U.S. To the solutions. Some argue for stricter gun control laws, such as universal background checks, banning certain types of weapons, and increasing funding for mental health services. Others argue for a more permissive approach, such as loosening restrictions on gun ownership and emphasizing the importance of the Second Amendment.
Fractures are appearing in the Ukraine conflict between the Western backers of the war, first amongst themselves, then with Ukraine. Even though some 50 nations agreed to provide Kyiv with billions of dollars worth of military hardware, including armored vehicle and munitions needed to push back Russian forces, Germany has refused to provide Ukraine with Leopard tanks. Not only that, it has prevented other nations from transferring these tanks to Ukraine by countries that have them in their possession. The new German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said that despite heightened expectations, we still cannot say when a decision will be taken and what the decision will be when it comes to the Leopard tanks. This has angered Ukraine, which blasted the global indecision of its allies after Germany's refusal. A Ukrainian presidential advisor tweeted, "Today's indecision is killing more of our people. Every day of delay is the death of Ukrainians.
think faster. It appears that the main disagreement lies between the U.S. and Germany, which has indicated that it would agree to do so only if the U.S. provided its Abrams tanks as well. Washington has said providing its Abrams tanks to Ukraine is not feasible, citing difficulties in training and maintenance. This disagreement has led to friction within the circle of U.S. congressmen. U.S. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham has called on both countries to supply the machines. To the Germans, he said send the tanks to Ukraine because they need them. It is in your national interest that Russian President Vladimir Putin loses in Ukraine. To the U.S. President Joe Biden administration, he said send American tanks so that others will follow our lead. Military assistance to Ukraine has continued unabated in recent weeks and months. The headline reads, Europe is gearing up to send Western tanks to Ukraine. It almost sounds like the warring parties are just getting warmed up to the conflict that the war has entered a new phase. One conclusion could be that Ukraine is losing the war on the ground since it continues to seek more military assistance and what it has received so far has not been enough to defeat the Russian forces. This, however, will not deter NATO and a number of individual member states who have pledged to provide heavier weapons to Ukraine. U.S.'s cautious stance may be that it does not want to fall into a direct conflict with Russia. That could also mean that it may risk defeat or that this risks getting into a nuclear confrontation. Russia's reaction to countries that are going to provide Ukraine with tanks was a warning. Dmitry Medvedev, deputy chairman of the Security Council of the Russian Federation, has said Kiev's foreign backers do not care about Ukrainian lives and are motivated by their desire to hurt Russia. Those tanks can burn and will burn like the rest of the weapons. The nations supplying them are using Ukraine as an instrument in achieving their anti-Russian goals. Russia has also stated that this is no longer a war between Russia and Ukraine, but a war between Russia and U.S. and NATO. But what the Ukrainian defense minister said has been very telling. He tweeted recently, "We are carrying out NATO's mission today. They aren't shedding their blood. We are shedding ours. That's why they are required to supply us with weapons." All that brings everyone to the question, when will Ukrainians realize their country is being sacrificed for the sake of the U.S. weakening Russia?
Zamir Kabulov, Russia's presidential envoy to Afghanistan, says that the U.S. has been reaching out to the Taliban's opposition groups, such as Daesh, and secretly giving money to them. He describes the reasoning for this covert support as such: because they really want to avenge their shameful military political defeat in Afghanistan, and in retaliation, they do everything so that peace isn't established in this troubled land. He further linked this move to Russia's security by saying, "With the armed opposition in Afghanistan, the Anglo-Saxons are covertly sponsoring Daesh, who are aimed at undermining not only the stability of our Central Asian partners, but also the security of Russia. Allegations of the U.S. supporting Daesh in particular have been around for a decade at this point. Sometimes they even come from U.S. officials."
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton. Co-founder, crooked Hillary Clinton.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is among the top officials that accused the United States of backing Daesh. Erdogan made the accusations in response to U.S. accusations against his government for supporting terrorist groups. He said, "Now they give support to terrorist groups including Daesh, YPG, PYD. It is very clear. We have confirmed evidence with pictures, photos, and videos." In a 3-year field study into the supply chain of Daesh, it was found that the arming and external funding that anti-Assad rebel groups received from the US found their way into the hands of Daesh. With all the accusations on America's direct involvement in the founding of Daesh, the indirect involvement that most of the world agrees resulted in the creation of the terror group is the quote-unquote power vacuum that the US left in the region by fighting the many wars it fought, especially the invasion of Iraq and the support of Syrian rebel groups. The US effectively fought a war in Afghanistan for 20 years with a budget of over $2.1 trillion to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. The Taliban has been accused of many things since their swift power grab back in August of 2021, but what they have managed to do is stabilizing the country and ridding it of power struggles. That means groups like Daesh, who still have a presence in the region, weren't able to establish bases in Afghanistan, despite still carrying out terrorist attacks for a while after Taliban's takeover, the number of which have significantly dropped over the last year. Now, with around 97% of the population of Afghanistan below poverty line, and with half of the country's billions of dollars worth of foreign assets frozen by the US, the last thing the country can afford is US shenanigans trying to prop up Takfiri terrorist groups there. Recently, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken poured salt on the wounds of Afghanistan by justifying the way the U.S. left Afghanistan by saying, if the forces had remained there, quote, it would have, I think, made much more complicated the support that we've been able to give and that others have been able to give Ukraine. Almost as if Afghanistan was a pawn in the grand scheme of US's political agendas, an attitude that isn't too uncommon in US politics with all of their friends and foes. Instances of such attitude are numerous, from the promise of retaliation to Saudi Arabia over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and then doing nothing about it because Saudi Arabia is a strategic partner to the US, to using Taiwan as a means to get under China's skin that could lead to a conflict wherein Taiwan will turn into a pawn for US's political games.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has held a press briefing to give an update on the ongoing war in Ukraine. In his press briefing, which was held in Moscow on Wednesday, Lavrov accused Ukraine's foreign policy of being under the dictation of Western nations. The Russian top diplomat further noted that Western nations have yet to make, quote, serious proposals to Russia on how the conflict should be resolved. Lavrov added that Russia was willing to support a draft truce proposed by Ukraine in late March, but the proposal was destroyed by Ukraine's Western supporters. He also said, in reality, the West decides for Ukraine what its foreign policy should be. Western officials have repeatedly claimed that arming Ukraine would help it achieve a better negotiation position and that no talks with Russia should take place before this happens. Lavrov further said Moscow would react to any serious proposal for overcoming the crisis that come from the US and its allies, but none has been sent so far. He also added that the West is using Ukraine to destroy the security system that existed in Euro-Atlantic for many years. Lavrov's comments come amid deepening crisis in Ukraine. On Wednesday, a helicopter crash killed Ukraine's interior minister, his deputy, and the state secretary of the ministry. The deaths have been described as a huge blow for Ukraine. The United States and its Western allies are also ramping up their support for Ukraine. Reports say Mark Milley, chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, met for a couple of hours with Ukraine's chief military officer, General Valery Zaluzhny, in Poland. This is the first face-to-face talks between them since the war began in February 2022. The meetings are expected to focus on Ukraine's ongoing and future military needs. The United Kingdom has also pledged a squadron of its Challenger tanks, but it has too few to form the basis of a Ukrainian force. The moves by the United States and the UK come amid an apparent rift in the anti-Russia coalition.
Well, last year it was $2.3 billion, and from financial year 2023, we'll put in another $2.3 billion. Some of that is non-military aid, some of that is the likes of humanitarian support such as generators, some of that is obviously military hardware, some of it is training. We trained 10,000 Ukrainians in the UK, and we'll train another 20,000 in the UK, and some of it is effectively backfilling British stock.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has named Boris Pistorius as the country's new defence minister at a time of mounting pressure on Berlin from Western allies to allow Ukraine to use German-made tanks in the war with Russia. However, Germany says when it comes to sending tanks to Ukraine, Berlin is still waiting for the US to take the lead.
And this is the strategy we have, that we are strategically interlocked together with our friends and partners, that we are working together with them, that we are discussing with them, and that we are never doing something just by ourselves, but together with others, especially the United States, which are very important in this common task to defend the Ukrainian independence and sovereignty.
Germany is under pressure to participate in a broader alliance of countries that will supply Ukraine's army with modern Leopard 2 battle tanks. The previous German defense minister, Christine Lambrecht, was a loyal defender of Chancellor Scholz's cautious tank stance. Analysts said the delay so far has to do with disagreements amongst Western countries about the lethality of the weapons Ukraine needed. Russia has denounced the Western weapons supplies. Officials say Ukraine's allies were using the country as a tool to achieve their anti-Russian goals. Kremlin says the tanks that the UK pledged will burn just like the rest.
Iqra. بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانا يا من ينجينا إحسانا ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International School. So, today I'm really happy to inform you that again, alhamdulillah, we have some of the students of Sevier International School here with us in this Quranic session. Inshallah, we'll be here with you with another Quranic session. Before we start, I really say salam from the depth of my heart to all our brothers here, and I really welcome you all. Salam, how are you? Fine, Fawad?
Yes, sir.
Hussein, Hassan?
Yes, sir.
Fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, today, inshallah, the same as previous sessions, inshallah, we'll move on with one of the ayah of Surah Al-Baqarah, ayah 259 on chapter 30, page 43. So, brothers and sisters, if you have your Quran, please turn to page 43, ayah 259 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Fawad, Hassan, and Hussein, before we start our class, let's everyone listen to the recitation, then inshallah, we'll continue our class, okay? All right? Yes, let's go.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. أو كالذي مر على قرية وهي خاوية على عروشها قال قال أنى يحيي هذه الله بعد موتها فأماته الله 100 عام ثم بعثه قال كم لبثت قال لبثت يوما أو بعض يوم قال بل لبثت 100 عام فانظر إلى طعامك وشرابك لم يتسنه وانظر إلى حمارك ولنجعلك آية للناس وانظر إلى العظام كيف ننشزها ثم نكسوها لحما فلما تبين له قال أعلم أن الله على كل شيء قدير.
Nice recitation. This is a long ayah also. Inshallah, we'll practice it. Okay, brothers and sisters, please listen and practice. Ready for what? Hassan Hussein, listen and practice. Yes. Okay, repeat. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
أو كالذي مر على قرية وهي خاوية على عروشها
أو كالذي مر على قرية وهي خاوية على عروشها
وهي خاوية على عروشها قال أنى يحيي هذه الله بعد موتها
وهي خاوية على عروشها قال أنى يحيي هذه الله بعد موتها
أحسنت فأماته الله 100 عام ثم بعثه
فأماته الله 100 عام ثم بعثه
قال كم لبثت قال لبثت يوما أو بعض يوم
قال كم لبثت قال لبثت يوما أو بعض يوم
قال بل لبثت 100 عام فانظر إلى طعامك وشرابك لم يتسنه
قال بل لبثت 100 عام فانظر إلى طعامك وشرابك لم يتسنه
وانظر إلى حمارك ولنجعلك آية للناس
وانظر إلى حمارك ولنجعلك آية للناس
وانظر إلى العظام كيف ننشزها ثم نكسوها لحما
وانظر إلى العظام كيف ننشزها ثم نكسوها لحما
فلما تبين له قال أعلم أن الله على كل شيء قدير
فلما تبين له قال أعلم أن الله على كل شيء قدير
أحسنتم ما شاء الله long ayah we did it finally guys I just explain it okay I will not go to translation and I will not go to more explanation because it's a long ayah we will have less time okay we'll practice the tajweed rules inshallah it talks about Prophet Uzair alayhi salam, and he moved. He was crossing a village, okay, and he saw some bones, okay, of the dead bodies, okay, down there. And he asked himself a question that, how is Allah Almighty gonna give them life again, okay? So when he was thinking of this in his mind, okay, once Allah Almighty made him die, okay? And again Allah Almighty give him life again, okay? Brought him to life again. Then Allah Almighty asked him that, how long were you deaf? He said, well, I was deaf for about a day or half a day. And Allah Almighty said, no, you were deaf for 100 years. For 100 years, okay? You were deaf. Then Allah Almighty told him that, look at your food, look at your drink, okay? The water, anything he had, okay? Nothing has happened to him. You were deaf for 100 years, and yes, but nothing has happened. In this 100 years, nothing has happened to your food. Your food is fresh. Your drink is there, fresh. Everything is fresh. Look, Allah Almighty made Prophet die for 100 years, okay? But without any refrigerator, without anything, the food was still fresh. It is the power of Allah Almighty that keeps something alive, keeps something dead. So death and life is both in the control of Allah Almighty. He gives people death or life. Alright? So then, وَانْظُرْ إِلَىٰ حِمَارِكَ وَلِنَجْعَلَكَ آيَةً لِلنَّاسِ. Look at your donkey, okay? How we give it again the bone, okay? How we, for example, cover the bone with meat, okay? These things, muscles, okay? How? Look at the creation, how we do it. Allah Almighty brought the donkey to life again, okay? In front of his eyes, before the eyes of Prophet Uzair. So Allah Almighty showed his power to him and made him believe it more, okay? That Allah Almighty gives the death and these things. Okay? May inshallah Allah Almighty make us count as amongst those who believe in the resurrection the way it is, inshallah. Okay? May inshallah Allah Almighty resurrect us with the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and his family. أهل البيت عليهم السلام.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So guys, that was the message. Make sure, inshallah, you refer to the Tafasir book, inshallah, for more explanation. Let's move on with the Tajweed rules. Important ones, inshallah, we'll mention since this ayah is a long ayah. أو كالذي مر على قرية. Make sure the letter ra, qaf, kha, when they have fatha, okay, pronounce them with a heavy sound. Okay? قرية, not قرية. مر, not مر. Alright? These are important. Heavy and light letters you can review. قرية وهي قرية تنوين plus واو. Yes? Idgham. Yeah, the rule idgham with those six letters. Ya, ra, mim, lam, waw, noon. The six letters, okay? Idgham, remember. Khawiyatun ala urushiha. Khawiyatun, tanween plus ayn. Ayn, hamza, ha, ayn, ghain, kha, ha. So these six letters, okay? Make sure you pronounce what? The letter noon or tanween?
Clearly.
Idhar is applied, okay? وهي خاوية على عروشها قال أنى يحيي هذه الله بعد موتها هذه الله. Why the word Allah is pronounced Allah? Because of the هذه, the kasra sound.
Yes.
We had the rule. The rule says if there is a fatha sound or a dhamma sound, the word Allah is pronounced like Allah. The lam is like with an a sound. Allah. But when we have a kasra sound, the lam is pronounced with an a sound. La, right? That's the rule. هذه الله بعد موتها فأماته الله مئة عام. We have too many salah here in this ayah. So all of them talk about this one rule. And the rule says, Hussein?
Wasl
is better than waqf. It means connecting is better than stopping, okay? You can continue reading them all together. So, فَأَمَاتَهُ اللَّهُ مِئَةَ. Do you see after mim, مِئَةَ, after mim there's an alif? On the top of alif you see a sukun or a circle sign?
Yes. Who?
So it says that the alif is not pronounced. Mi, then ata, okay? مِئَةَ. It's written this way, but not pronounced. All right? Say?
Yes.
Do not say مِئَةَ. No. مِئَةَ. عَامٍ ثُمَّ. عَامٍ ثُمَّ. Tanwin plus tha. Tha is from the?
Rest of the letters.
What rule is applied? إِخْفَى. Hide the sound of the noon. Tanwin. عَامٍ. Produce the sound. Look. إِخْفَى means you hide the sound. You do not let the sound come out of your mouth. Let the sound come out of your nose. عَامٍ ثُمَّ. Right? That's it. Then, قَالَ كَمْ لَبِثْتَ قَالَ لَبِثْتُ يَوْمًا أَوْ بَعْضَ يَوْمٍ. Again, إِظْهَار. قَالَ بَلْ لَبِثْتُ إِدْغَام بَلْ لَبِثْتُ مِئَةَ عَامٍ فَانْظُرْ. Again, إِخْفَى. فَانْظُرْ. إِخْفَى again. إِلَى طَعَامِكَ وَشَرَابِكَ لَمْ يَتَسَنَّهْ وَانْظُرْ إِلَى حِمَارِكَ وَلِنَجْعَلَكَ. Jim Sakin, the rule?
Qalqala.
Qalqala, echoing sound. وَلِنَجْعَلَكَ آيَةً لِلنَّاسِ وَانْظُرْ إِلَى الْعِظَامِ كَيْفَ نُنْشِزُهَا. Again, إِخْفَى. We are just reviewing the rules, okay? You make sure, inshallah, you refer to the rules. Remember them. What rule was it? Practice them, okay? ثُمَّ نَكْسُوهَا لَحْمًا. If you stop, then when fatha will be changed to? لحمة ألف مات لحمة. فلما تبين له قال إشبع له. Stretch the sound. قال أعلم أن الله على كل شيء قدير. Heavy إخفاء, right? Heavy غنة in إخفاء. So guys, I just mentioned the important points, the important rules of Tajweed in this ayah. Make sure, inshallah, you refer to your lessons, previous lessons, inshallah, okay? You practice the Tajweed rules, Ikhfa, Izhar, and then with those rules, read and recite and repeat this ayah. You have any questions, Hassan?
No.
Hussein?
No, sir.
No questions? No. Brothers and sisters, I hope, inshallah, you have learned something from this session. May, inshallah, Allah accept your ibadah. Actually, learning and listening the Quran is ibadah. So, may Allah accept them. And see you, inshallah, in the coming sessions. Stay with us, please. Thanks for being with us in this session on IRB English English Radio. Stay with IRB English Radio. Thanks to IRB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International School. And thanks Fawad, Hassan and Hussein. See you in the next session. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajam.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
KO Terrace Part 2.
Mind-altering practices. Unquestioning commitment to the group. Cult of personality. Preoccupation with bringing in new members. shifting alliances in exchange for power. These are the guidelines of a cult. What if we told you that this dangerous cult has its base in Paris, France?
By some luck, or maybe some unluck performance, we found that there was an organization in France, and this organization used to have some people, some member that decided to burn themselves. So we tried to know why they decided to burn themselves in the middle of the street in Paris in a day of July in 2003.
Not far from where this family lives, we meet two ex-members of MEK. They are the ones who can best describe why this is not an organization but a cult, since they escaped from it with great difficulty. They got married a month ago and are now trying to catch up with the time they lost. They have spent the most precious years of their lives away from their country, a country that they have rediscovered. In France, Anvers and Françoise are ready to carry out a new action. They are going back to Auvers-sur-Oise to speak with the new mayor of the town. This time they bring no banners or slogans. They are visiting to make sure the new mayor knows about the presence of a dangerous organization in town. Anvers and Françoise have been recognized. Is she reporting some MEK enemies in town? Strange reaction. An organization fighting against cults so surprising? Or maybe she knows who Anvers is talking about? Confirmed. She knows who Anvers is talking about and also who he is. She doesn't authorize demonstrations in town, in France? Where is freedom of expression? What is she hiding? How can a so-called peaceful organization act so strangely? Our team wanted to know why. If Western authorities know about the terrorist past of this organization, why do many politicians agree to attend their rally in Villepinte every June, where thousands of people gather to support Mariam Rajavi and the MEK organization? So we came to the meeting this year. And to our surprise, we found hundreds of buses with thousands of people from all over Europe and the Middle East. Afghans, Syrians, Poles, Ukrainians, Czechs, Germans. However, the Iranians attending the meeting were the minority.
You came all over here just for this weekend?
Yeah. Just for that conversation here.
But they invited you?
Yes, of course.
Nice, it's good.
Yeah, like everybody here, yeah.
So have you been inside?
Of course.
And? You don't understand?
No, nothing.
Okay.
Too much speaking. And I want to sleep. And we come outside, drink, eat, relax.
But you have to spend the whole day here.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, but tomorrow no.
No, tomorrow we go to Paris. Yes, make photos and stuff like that.
When did you arrive?
Today morning, at 11.
And you leave?
Tomorrow.
By bus?
Yeah.
Okay. So where do you come from?
From Prague.
And you came all over here just for the meeting?
Yes, and to Paris too.
But they paid for the whole trip, right?
No, we have to pay something, but a small amount of money.
Okay. And were you inside the meeting?
Yes, like for 3 hours.
And what do you think, or what did you understand?
I think it's a strategy to bring us here because it's Paris and they made it very cheap so they can have their rally, but we are not allowed to go out to the buses or to the hotel because otherwise they won't give us the key to enter to the hotel. So it's the only way to keep us here, and not even here, we are in the grass sitting because they are just trying to support this woman that is outside of Iran and won't change anything because she doesn't have enough support. So we are the only ones here, but we are forced to stay.
How do you feel after having seen what's inside?
I feel really disappointed because I came here because there was some organization who proposed this trip to Paris in order to know about this conference, which was, I was told it was about human rights of these Iranian people. And so I came kind of excited about this because I studied journalism, for me it's kind of interesting. But when I came here, the first that I saw was the bad organization, which meant something to me, like something really strange, because if you come to some event like this, they're supposed to be more organized and take care about this kind of stuff. So we were waiting like 2 hours outside, waiting to go inside. Then once we were inside, it seems to be like we were in some kind of, I don't know, performance or something like this, because
political rally.
Exactly, like political rally. And they didn't talk about the topics that I was told, but she was like, they were talking about more like to support these ideas they have, I don't know. And it seemed to be like they didn't care about people around because people were doing like whatever, but not putting attention. So I think I feel like they, like I was lied.
How many people are here today? 100,000? 110,000? How often have you come here?
So the real question is not how many people are here today, but how many Iranians are here, and also how many people have not been brought here with a trip to Paris as bait to attend this meeting. Let us explain how the people are distributed inside the building where this rally is taking place. All the tourists occupy 90% of the space. In each seat, they can find t-shirts, flags, and all sorts of gadgets to look like good supporters in front of the cameras. But closer to the stage, we have a VIP zone where all the Iranians are meant to be sitting. One would think that at such a huge meeting, this zone would be packed. But here is a still taken from the MEK's official video where we can see a lot of empty seats. And not only that, you have to have a bracelet to get in. We obviously had not been invited as VIPs, but we found a young lady from the MEK organization distributing those bracelets for the VIP zone in a kind of hidden place. So there we go, inside the VIP zone, to find some Iranians, the only supporters they got, MEK members, and plenty of empty seats.
A country and an Ayatollah who dedicates himself to the destruction of one of our strongest allies, the State of Israel, who almost every week says, destruction to the State of Israel. We unequivocally support a non-nuclear Iran. Now, what does a non-nuclear Iran mean? It doesn't mean 2 months away from being able to have a nuclear missile. It doesn't mean 1 year away from having a nuclear missile. It doesn't mean an Iran that will become a nuclear power in 10 years.
The first time the organization had revealed some facts about Iran's nuclear activities, this information was given to the organization by the Israeli intelligence. And since they didn't want to reveal it themselves, they wanted some Iranians to do that. They went to the monarchists and Reza Pahlavi to do it. They didn't accept. They said they would not do against the interest of their country. But the MKO accepted to do that. And this was the start of Iranian nuclear crisis. And after that, MKO had no role in it. But they wanted to keep their role because they claimed that they got this information from their sources inside Iran. So each time they used to fabricate some lies, give it out as Iranians' nuclear activities, which was not true. And many times it was proven that it was not true. They wanted to be part of this West's manufacture of crisis against Iran.
While MEK's political rally is taking place in Villepinte, former MEK members are demonstrating against the MEK and the Rajavis in the very center of Paris.
Rajavi, terrorists! Terrorists, Rajavi!
Rajavi, terrorists, terrorists, Rajavi! Rajavi, Daesh, Daesh, Rajavi!
Rajavi, Daesh, Daesh, Rajavi!
Rajavi is a murderer! Down with Rajavi!
I'm afraid of something can happen to me or to my family. And it's true that when you have someone that is ready to threat you in front of police, in front of security guard, in front of any kind of security of authority, official authority, I'm a little bit afraid. Yes, I'm a little bit afraid. It's true that they succeeded in a kind of way. They succeeded to stop us by their threat, by their violence, because if I can ask you something, what do you do in front of someone ready to burn himself? They are very dangerous. I think we can continue our action, and we will continue our action, because freedom has to win. But for now, we decided to continue in another way, by communication. Communication is the key.
Many secrets remain in Auvers-sur-Oise that our team has not been able to unearth. But one thing we know is that in the very heart of Europe, a group of young French activists have been threatened by a so-called peaceful organization. They are afraid of carrying on with their plan of combating cults. In Auvers-sur-Oise, there are still many residents unaware of the origins of the terrorist group living in their town right beside them.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.